Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some really interesting guests on. In the first half, we're going to talk to Karen Wonders. She's an oncologist and she's the author of Faith and Fitness. And we're going to see what exercise has to do with oncology. And then in the second half, we have an author, an empath, who's written the book A Journey Within. It's Luann Ludwig. But first, we're going to have Alan with the Health First News.
A study that tracked the weight and survival of more than 6,000 Americans for 24 years reinforces the notion that piling on excess pounds can lead to an earlier grave. Being statistically obese, but not simply overweight, was tied to a 27% increase in the odds of dying within the study period, according to a research team from Boston University. People in the obese category had a body mass index between 30 and 34, with 30 being the statistical threshold for obesity. The risk of dying young was also higher for very obese people, those with a BMI of 35 to 39. People in this weight category had nearly double the odds of dying during the 24-year study period compared to people with a normal weight, said biostatistician Ching-Ti Liu and colleagues. The study was published online November 16th in JAMA Network Open. Coffee's bitter taste shouldn't be a selling point, but a genetic variant explains why so many people love the brew, a new study suggests. Bitterness evolved as a natural warning system to protect people from harmful substances. That means they should want to spit out coffee, the researchers said. But their study of more than 400,000 people in the United Kingdom found that the more sensitive people are to the bitter taste of caffeine, the more coffee they drink. The sensitivity is caused by a genetic variant. The study appears November 15th in the journal Scientific Reports. Strictly limiting carbohydrates and eating more fat may help the body burn more calories, a new clinical trial shows. Researchers found that among 164 adults in a weight loss study, those placed on a low-carb, high-fat diet burned more daily calories versus those given high-carb meals. On average, their bodies used up 250 extra calories per day over 20 weeks. Senior researcher Dr. David Ludwig says this study refutes the conventional thinking that it's only calorie cutting that matters. He is co-director of the New Balance Foundation Obesity Prevention Center at Boston Children's Hospital. He and his colleagues reported the findings online November 14th in the BMJ. Obesity in the teen years may increase the risk of developing deadly pancreatic cancer in adulthood, researchers report. The odds for this rare cancer can quadruple due to obesity, the Israeli research team found. Moreover, the risk rises as weight increases, even affecting men in the high normal weight range. For the new study, researchers led by Dr. Zohar Levi of Rabin Medical Center in Petah Tikva and Tel Aviv University collected data on more than 1 million Jewish men and 700,000 Jewish women in Israel. Participants had physical examinations at ages 16 to 19 from 1967 to 2002. The report was published online November 12th in the journal Cancer.
Dr. Karen Wonders has a PhD and is the founder and director of Maple Tree Cancer Alliance and professor of exercise physiology at Wright State University. Through Maple Tree, she provides free exercise training, nutritional counseling, and spiritual support to hundreds of cancer survivors. And on top of that, Karen has a husband and seven children. Welcome, Karen.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you on the show. So you've worked with cancer for many years. What have you found? Is the science behind doing the exercises?
Yeah, you know, I've been working in this field since 2003, so going on 16 years now. And time and time again, I have just found with my research and just with my personal interactions with our patients that exercise really does make such a difference, not only in improving symptom severity, so we're seeing people have improved quality of life and less fatigue and less pain, but also they can actually get stronger even in the middle of things like chemotherapy, which we traditionally think of chemotherapy as being something that would make you so weak and tired. So it's truly amazing.
Okay, so chemo does make you weak and tired. What kind of exercises would you suggest to somebody who can hardly get out of bed?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think when you're experiencing that level of fatigue where all you want to do is stay in bed, most people would tell you, oh, just take a nap and rest and you'll be fine. But actually, research shows that that makes you even more tired. And so we have found that meeting people right where they are and designing individualized, personalized exercise programs that are just right for the person, we have seen tremendous improvements. And so we promote a full body exercise with a cardiovascular component and strength training and flexibility. And again, it's designed to meet the specific strengths and weaknesses of that patient.
Karen, can you tell us a little bit about your grandfather and how you helped him?
Sure. So in 2007, my grandfather was diagnosed with colon cancer, and he had a pretty aggressive form of the disease. So from the day of his diagnosis to the day of his death was 5 weeks, which is not very common when you hear of this type of cancer. So he had a very aggressive form. And I remember visiting him soon after he was diagnosed. And at this point, you know, he was pretty much bound to his bed. He couldn't leave the house. He couldn't go up and down stairs. And I remember talking with him, and he was sitting on a chair while my grandmother was feeding him scrambled eggs. And he turned to me and he said, "You have no idea how exhausting it is just to eat these eggs." And so that gives you an idea of the level of fatigue that he was experiencing. And so at this point, I had been studying the effects of exercise and cancer recovery for about 5 years. And I knew exercise would make a difference, but I also knew, looking at my grandfather, he couldn't go to a gym. And so I said, "Well, how about every hour on the hour, we get you up out of bed and we walk just one lap around the downstairs of your house, and then you go back to bed." And I think to someone on the outside looking in, that would have looked like nothing. They would have thought, why even bother with that? But to my grandfather, it really did make a difference. It improved his mood and improved his energy levels. And I really believe that it gave him a sense of control back in his life, which at the time was really spinning out of control.
So focusing on the things that you can control, whatever minute bits those are the ones to focus on.
Yes, yes. We always say something is always better than nothing, even if it's just one walk around the downstairs of your house.
Mm-hmm. And there's something like over 13,000 studies now on exercise and cancer?
Yes, yes, there are. And you know, reputable peer-reviewed journals, they all show that exercise is positive and beneficial and safe. A lot of times people aren't sure that it's safe during exercise or during cancer treatment, but it truly is.
Right. Well, the old way of thinking was it might cause stress and increase the cancer, right?
Yes. In fact, that was the belief for a long time, that the increase in blood flow would cause the cancer cells to spread throughout the body. But in 1986, that was the first published study that showed there was a benefit to exercise during cancer recovery. And since then, time and time again, we have seen that it's safe and it's effective and it truly makes a difference in patient outcomes. And it also helps to save them money because they're seeing fewer ER visits and hospital stays, and all those things add up to just a better patient experience.
Mm-hmm. And we all know that cancer is a very, very, very expensive program. So every little bit of exercise and every bit of, like, I see you as an encourager spiritually, physically, and mentally when you're seeing your patient. So it's not just on the physical level.
Right, right. Yes, because, you know, cancer is not just a physical illness. I mean, it affects every aspect of your life. And so our goal is to improve the quality of life of all the patients that we serve. And you can't just do that if you're just focusing on the physical. And so we try to be there to support them in all aspects. So if they're really struggling spiritually and they have questions and don't know where to turn, then we have resources available to them for that.
Mm-hmm. And how do you handle the toxicity of the medicines that you do have to use sometimes? Is there ways to help remove those toxic medicines once they're in the system?
That's a great question. You know, we don't deal directly with the administration of the medicine. We typically see people either before or after a chemotherapy session. And, you know, what we do is the exercise program or the nutrition advice that we give, those are all aimed at reducing some of the side effects. There are some studies, though, that look at the pharmacokinetics of medicine, and they have found actually that exercise does help improve the work of that medicine in the body. So it's almost like it makes it more effective than if someone had not exercised. So it truly, I believe that our bodies were designed to exercise. That is how we were created, and just so many things improve as a result of being active and making these healthy choices.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us some of the stories that you've seen with people who have exercised through and pushed through at any cost?
Yeah, you know, right now we're working with about 500 patients every single week, and we see so many stories of inspiration. And I think it's important to know that most of the people that we see, 85% of the time, they were completely sedentary before their cancer diagnosis. And so it's not like these are people that were active and then they just had this fluke cancer diagnosis, but they continued to exercise anyway. These are people who never exercised before, and then they got sick. And when you're sick, exercise is probably the last thing that you want to do, but they're choosing to continue to start exercising, even in the midst of all this. And we have a patient who's been with us for 2.5 years. She started training with us when she was 82 years old, had never exercised a day in her life before her diagnosis. And, you know, so I always look at her and I think, well, you're never too late to start. And she's been with us 2.5 years, has never missed an appointment. She's in remission from her cancer and she's doing so great. We have so many stories like that.
Isn't that fantastic at 82 to get up and want to go? Right? That's just amazing. And cancer really knows no boundaries. You must have athletes that show up too, that are always training and still come down with cancer issues.
Yes, we do. We do about 15% of the time. And so I think the biggest hurdle to overcome when working with athletes or people who were active before is a lot of times they feel almost betrayed by their cancer diagnosis. And they say to us, well, I've done all the right things. I've exercised, I've eaten healthy, and still I got cancer. And what was all that for? And so I think it's always important to remind them that your body is so strong and you're going to be able to withstand the treatment so much better. And, you know, who knows if you would have gotten cancer 5 years sooner had you not been exercising. And so it's always important to try to encourage them with that. I know my grandfather was very active his whole life, and he still got cancer. So it's not one of those things where you should be disappointed in yourself or feel like a failure, which we hear from some of our patients sometimes. But it's important to continue that level of activity that you were doing and continue to make that a priority, because you're still going to need that strength and that stamina to get through this journey.
And how important is it to have a team and not feel alone in a cancer diagnosis?
That is so great, because you see that happening. I think it's about a third of the time patients feel lonely while they're walking through cancer, whether they have a strong support system or not. Oftentimes they feel like people just don't understand, or sometimes they feel like they have to put on a happy front and can't really talk about their feelings and their fears and all those things that go along with a cancer diagnosis. And so having someone that you can talk to, and sometimes that's a spouse, but other times maybe it's a nurse. I hear stories of people becoming good friends with their oncology nurses. You know, at Mapletree, we do the one-on-one individualized exercise training, and so I know our patients become very close with their trainers, and they really feel like this person is in my corner, and I can be real, and I can tell this person what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling, and they get it, and they'll help me through whatever problem it is that I have, and that's so important to have.
Wow, that's wonderful. We're going to have to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about cancer and fitness.